Hi, y'all. I'm Katie Parker. I am an alcoholic. Oh, my God, Roger. I thought I was going to... Okay. I'm going to talk a little faster than Roger. You got to love him. Got to love him. We are such a judgmental group of people. You know what I mean? I'm not the only one who had that thought. Come on. Come on. So, I just have a tendency to say it. This is such an honor. It's always an honor to be asked to speak. I take everything I do in Alcoholics Anonymous as an honor. Making the coffee, stacking the chairs. I was raised in that level of AA. But standing behind this podium is a big deal to me. It's a big deal because someone, first of all, thought I had a message that had depth and weight. And I also believe I do have a message of depth and weight. And I also believe that I have a way of sharing my experience that I hope will help you. And I think if you can mix a little criteria together, you too can get behind the podium. It's open for everybody. But because I've got a God that is absolutely crazy about Katie, crazy about me, loves me, period. Never been loved like that in my life. I've been sober since October the 28th of 1984. And I am very, very grateful. I've got 26 years of sobriety. I drank for 14 years. You will hear very little of my drinking story. I have always believed that it's more about sharing my experience of being sober. This is what we're trying to achieve. So you'll see very little of my drinking experience. However, I will qualify. And you'll hear a whole lot more of how I live sober. Because to me, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, at least for this drunk. I got my glasses. They've got to be cute. That's criteria number one. And I really don't like this part of it. I want this, but I can't do that because then you're all blurry. So I have to do this. But I want to tell you, first of all, speaking Sunday at 2:00, oh my God, finally. That's all I can say. I'm like, finally, it's my turn. And every speaker that spoke, I thought, yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is going to be 2 hours. Where'd Lee go? I need to tell him it's going to be a 2-hour talk. Are y'all in for the ride? I am spinning up here. I got all kinds of stuff to talk about. First of all, too, it's when we first came into the conference, I saw this security ribbon, and I want one. I want to be security. I actually want a gun, but that's probably not the best thing. You will see quickly on, my husband says I'm a little like taking a drink out of a fire hose, and you will figure that out real quick. I am not a submissive, shy gal. It's been such an honor to get to know Monica, and she reminds me very much of me, and I like that. She's also the cutest darn thing I've ever seen, and the minute I saw her, I thought, oh, we'll talk AA and a couple of beauty tips, you know, for sure. And I'm a tomboy. I shoot shotguns. I like to power wash. I'd prefer to have driven a concrete truck for a living. I got tomboy all over me, but when I see a pretty girl, I'm also going to learn all about that, too. You know what I mean? It's like, show me how you do that. So she came up and did this hair. Not bad, huh? See, I bet you boys don't have somebody coming to your room doing your hair, do you? Uh-huh. God, I love being a woman. And I really do love being a woman. I love being a woman, a strong woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love having a strong opinion in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I also love being able to be taught. And there's a lot of things that we got to do, fine lines to bring this all together. But you'll hear some of my opinions. Of course you're going to hear my opinions. I'm going to talk for an hour. Show me one alcoholic that's not going to have an opinion in an hour. You know, you're going to hear some of my opinions, but take those opinions, run them past the book. If they don't stand behind the book, then so be it. But the truth of the matter is this is a program about us saving lives, right? I am merely the vessel for you to get in touch with the power. That's all I'm here for. We are beyond human aid, the book says. I'm a big fan of that big book. I absolutely love this book. And there was a time in my sobriety that if I saw you carrying it, I ran as fast as I could from you because it bothered me that badly. How that happens is beyond me. The ego is cunning, baffling, and powerful. The disease of alcoholism rests in my mind. That's a dangerous place. And it doesn't sleep. No, it does not sleep. I have to say all the speakers have been spectacular, haven't they? Yeah, they really have been. I'm riveted. I love sitting through speakers. I'm riveted. I get the opportunity to speak around the country, and I get to sit and listen to these speakers, and I've learned, I think I've cleared enough away of self-centeredness that I can actually sit there and listen up until about an hour before I'm going to speak. And I'm sorry, Jerry, you and Sandy lost me because all I could think about was me. I'm like, okay, getting ready to get up there. Oh, they're still talking. Got to go put those pantyhose on. Got to go. But I paid attention to all the other speakers, and I'll tell you, I learned so much from every speaker, and I always say a prayer beforehand because, you see, I am the type of alcoholic, which I think I'm sitting in a room full of you, that has got such a way of blocking anything to come in. Oh, I don't like that. No, I disagree with that. No, I don't like the way they're saying that. Instead, I ask God, please open my heart so that I'm not just disagreeing with what they're saying or just agreeing with what I like. Leave me open so I can continue to learn. And Sandy and Jerry are very much my heroes. I have a lot of heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll tell you, they came in when AA, to me, was a different experience. They were doing a ton of 12-step work. I came in 26 years ago when codependency recovery was the big deal. Any of you guys that have over 20 years, you know that was the big deal. Melanie Beatty, codependent no more. Adult children of alcoholism. Take care of yourself. Darn it. And, you know, and the treatment centers were, you know, the biggest 12-step work you could do is load them up in the car and drop them off at treatment. You know, and so I grew up in AA at a different day and time. And so what I have to do is I have to listen closely to what these guys are talking about because they've got an experience that I didn't necessarily have. And if you're coming into AA today, you're having a different experience than what I had because AA today, I believe, on some level is different than it was 26 years ago. At least that's my observation of when I see it. So I'll be coming in and out of that experience and you'll see it. We have a couple more speakers left. Angie is spectacular. Where is Angie? There she is, my girl back there. She is spectacular. And then where is Paul? Who is Paul? I haven't met him yet. And he's speaking Monday. So I'm sure he'll show up. And, on my resentment inventory. But other than that, it'll be fine. And you know what, as it would be, I have a new best friend. And my new best friend, because you always meet speakers and you just fall in love, is Stu. Stu is my new best friend. I swear I got the opportunity to talk to him a couple of nights ago, and I went to the bedroom and I was telling Charlie, I said, I love this guy. I instantly took a liking to this guy, and I have a feeling we're going to remain good friends, Stu. And, I just love that stuff about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and everything that he talked about. I have a home group. My home group is the primary purpose group. We study the big book line by line, word by word, day after day, only one day a week, but week after week. It takes us 18 months to go through the first 164 pages of the big book. We have a 1935 dictionary, and one of the cool things about that meeting is it's a little different than a lot of other meetings is we study the book as it was written, not necessarily our experience with it, which is not a bad thing because it, you know, why is there is a solution before more about alcoholism? Why is we agnostics after that? Why did they put the doctor's opinion first? You know, we study the book as it was written, kind of as if you were going to a Bible study, you know, and it was kind of, it's been so enlightening to me because if you don't read and study the book, it to me is the directions that to get me in touch with this power, and I've got a sponsor that's going to tell me how to do all of that. But I got to study the book to learn the book to get the directions to get to the power, right? It's a pretty simple solution. Well, for a long time in my sobriety, you'll hear in my story that was not what I did, and you'll get to hear the what happened in my life because of that. It's not a pretty picture. I have two children. I have a 32-year-old daughter. I had her when I was 21. She was 5 years old when I got sober. I have a 22-year-old son. They have both blessed me with grandchildren. I got to tell you, grandbabies, I'm right there with Stu. They are God's do-over for the drunk. Let me tell you, they are spectacular. And they innately love you through and through. I mean, through and through. And so my grandson's almost five, and he'll say, Graham, can I have a popsicle before dinner? I'm like, have three. Sure. Run with the scissors. I don't care. Come on. That's not my job anymore. You know, I'm taking to the grocery store going, now listen, I'm going to get you this candy, but do not tell your parents, okay? And I am teaching them how to lie. You know, that happens. I'm sorry. I'm 53 years old. I believe that getting old is a privilege. I see the rest of the world doesn't all share that opinion with me, but I love getting old. I have found that there is such a joy in being older and wiser. Now, there's a couple of things I don't like about it, but the truth of the matter is the average person in this world is not digging getting older. As a matter of fact, you'll hear the common complaint of getting older. Well, I don't like getting older because, you know, and I'm like, man, the alternative is terrible if you don't take a positive flair on getting older. It's a privilege. It's a privilege. And I mean, gosh, after 50, you know, you're on the back nine. So I mean, you know, enjoy the back nine, you know. The other thing about that too, that I the book says, the most satisfying years of our existence lie ahead. Doesn't say it peters out after 10 years. So yeah, well, once you get to a certain age, yeah, just, you know, suck on the oxygen, you know, enjoy it. It says, man, the most satisfying years lie ahead. I'm a firm believer in that. I take alcoholism very seriously. I don't believe Alcoholics Anonymous is a self-help program. I believe it's a fatal illness, and people die all the time. And if you're on the firing lines, man, you will see that it is about saving lives. It is about trying to get people connected to that power. And when you see that, the magic in that, you know, the book talks about, it's really cool how the book talks about how men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Little understated, wouldn't you say? Yeah. I love the effect produced by alcohol. I didn't burn my world down because I liked it. I love the effect produced by alcohol. And it says, you know, having taken a few drinks, and they get the ease and comfort that come from taking a few drinks. And today what I look at that now is I get the ease and comfort by taking a few steps. Because when I work with another drunk, I get that satisfying. And that's always what I was looking for in the drink. I mean, how many of you guys, I loved it. I've always believed this is on the way to get the drink was when I was already relieved. I felt the relief long before I took the drink. Because I knew I was getting ready to get that. But the only problem is I suffer from an allergy. And that allergy it manifests. That's a big word. How many of y'all got some of these big words when you come into Alcoholics Anonymous? The manifestation of a craving. What the hell does that mean? You better have somebody explaining that book to you, or it does not make a lick of sense. So manifestation means how it shows up. It shows up in an itch I can't scratch, a trap I can't spring. I had no idea that when I started drinking, I kicked into the phenomenon of craving, triggered the allergy. I was off to the races. I always thought I'd just change my mind. How many of y'all took a few drinks and thought, you know what, I do need a few more? You know, how many of you guys sat at the bar and the bartender said, you need another one? And you went, nope, I am just fine. Never do I have that experience. I mean, back when I was drinking, we were at happy hour where it was buy one, get 15 free. And I didn't care if it was rock gut whiskey, you know, I'm drinking it. And then right before they got ready to shut down, they'd give you 15 more and you'd have 30 drinks sitting in front of you. It was never enough. And then, you know, it says that the disease of alcoholism rests in my mind. So I got a mind that's always going to take me back to the drink. And I got a body that cannot successfully drink. I got to have a fatal dose of alcoholism in step one. There is no good news in step one. Step one is a fatal dose of alcoholism. I don't believe you make step one just by showing up to AA. You can have a moment of clarity, but you darn sure better explain the disease of alcoholism to me, or I don't understand what you people want me to do. I sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous raising my hand saying I was an alcoholic with not a clear understanding of what it was. Did I stay sober? Yes, I did. But let me tell you what, it was a rocky little road. And I believe that understanding the book and teaching the book to the drunk is not a bad plan at all. It's not a bad plan to sit somebody down and explain to them what, like the book says in Working with Others, what precedes the first drink. That mental twist is what I need to talk to you about. Are you the guy that sat there in the morning and said, I swear to God I'm not drinking today? I never said I'm never drinking. How about you? Never. I wasn't ever not drinking. I'm just not drinking today. Today I'm not drinking. And then within a few hours I was drinking. See, and that's what the new guy, when you start talking to the new guy like that, and then you talk about that strange mental twist, and then once you start, you can't stop. And we always drink at the wrong time. I mean, how many of you guys drink at the wrong time? Always at the wrong time. And so, you know, we weren't walking around the bars, walking into the bars going, God dang, Bill, I've had this doggone obsession on me all day long, and I know the minute I take that drink, I'm going to trigger that phenomenon of craving. Load me one up, I'm doing it anyway. I just said, God, I can't take this outside world. I'm having a drink. And I had no idea what I was doing. And as a woman, see, my story is not at all like Teresa's. I love that little gal, man. I've seen Teresa's out there. That was not me. But I tell you, I was not a blackout drinker. And one of the reasons is I got an extensive experience with outside issues. But I am very respectful of singleness of purpose. Once I understood singleness of purpose, I was respectful of it. I wasn't respectful until I learned what singleness of purpose was about. But I'm not going to go into all that. But I have extensive use with outside issues because I was deathly afraid of becoming a blackout drinker. So I did a lot of outside issues to make sure that I was not passed out somewhere where someone could take advantage of me as a woman. And, you know, I a lot of people say when I speak, they go, oh, man, Katie, I'm so glad you were able here to talk to the women. I just want to slap them. That's what I do. I just want to slap them. I go, so you think I was just talking to the women? I'm talking to the men and the women about alcoholism. We've been sitting here listening to you men talk about alcoholism, and for God's sakes, we're learning. So just listen to a woman talk to you. Yes? Just say you're with me on that one. I told you I'm a bit like a fire hose, so, you know. I am talking about the disease of alcoholism. So one of the things, too, that I want to talk about is as the book requires, it says, you know, tell me a little bit about what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And really, guys, I believe alcoholism started long before I took a drink. As a matter of fact, I would never be looking back at my life if I wasn't in Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, the only thing I'd be looking back on my life is all the things that it handed me poorly, right? But all of a sudden, I am asked to look back at my life. I'm asked to write inventory on the things that are bothering me. They usually start with mom, dad, brother, sister. You know, that's the traditional inventory. Well, one of the things about me that I started looking back at, I would never have thought of this either, is that I used to love to hyperventilate. And now think about this. We would take a towel, wrap it up, and strangle each other till you passed out. At 8 years old. Think there's something wrong with that kid? Oh, my God. And I swear, when you'd come back into the world and there was that moment where it went from dark to get a little brighter, it was like, do it again. Do it again. And I swear there were some kids that just shot out of the room. And you know, I really believe that those are Al-Anons. They just shot right out of the room. I want nothing to do with that. And I'm like going, do it again. Do it again. And I loved Vicks Formula 44. I was a sick little kid. That black stuff, I used to just drink it all the time. I would never have thought of those two things had I not gotten sober. But I started realizing, my God, I never felt like I fit in. I was the kind of kid that you double dog dared me, and I'd do it. I'd put my life on the line at 9 years old. There was nothing I couldn't do. That's the kind of kid I was. You know, our program talks about self-manifested in various ways is what caused our failure. We have to get down to the causes and conditions. Is it hard to see my personality? Not at all. I am outspoken. I am prideful. I'm loud. I'm passionate. I am fiercely loyal. That's how self manifests in me. If self manifests in you as someone who is invisible and you're silently quiet there, but really quite loud, then that's just how it manifests in you. So don't miss what the book's asking you to look for in yourself, okay? Because people say, oh, my God, you're just like me. I'm like, no, you're alcoholic. That's what's all like here. You know, so it's how it manifests. We're so easy to read. Don't you love they gave us this piece of spiritual literature, you know, that's been handed down through the ages. You know, what we've got is we just have it numbered. You know, God said these people are going to need number one. Number two. You know, the rest of the people kind of go search out spiritual literature and read this stuff and kind of grasp it. We kind of need it laid out and numbered. And the other thing, too, is, you know, I think alcoholics, we don't have certain filters. And I don't think we ever really replace those filters. That's my experience. I have a toolkit that keeps me in line with life. But the truth of the matter is we don't have certain filters. And we don't see life like the average person sees life. And so I better keep my finger on the pulse of this level of self-centeredness we're talking about, or I am in trouble, man. And when I drift hard. I drift loud, and I drift hard. And so as a kid, I'm growing up, and I mean, I'm the Red Rover, come on over. I'm the third of three kids. My dad was an ex-professional football player. As a matter of fact, he played for the Miami Hurricanes. He was quite known for the Miami Hurricanes and probably all the cheerleaders. He was quite the player. And oh, he was something else. And you know what, Stu, you remind me a lot of my dad. I know. It's actually a compliment. But, you know, it's one of these things that in my household, we were raised Catholic, and there was a ton of drinking. And so alcohol always equaled fun. That was what was going on in my house, was a party, a highball, a cigarette. Everybody was just having fun. And I just loved it. I loved how everybody came to our house to party. A lot of laughter, a lot of ice, a lot of, you know, glasses tinkling and all of that. And then all of a sudden my mother gets sick. Now I don't know what's going on, but she gets sick. Now I'm the baby and I'm her special one. She gets sick when I'm 8. And the next thing I know, literally, she goes to the hospital and boom, she dies. And the next morning my dad walks into the bedroom and he says, your mother died last night. And it was like, wow. And my dad was such the entertainer. He's like, but it's going to be fine. We're going to be fine. And he turned up Engelbert Humperdinck as loud as he could in the music. And he'd come in playing the broom and the guitar, you know, the whole air guitar thing. And life was just, okay, we're going to be fine. And my dad, in the next 18 months, remarried 3 times in an 18-month period and had 4 live-in housekeepers. Because he traveled around in his business, and from what I understand from my brother, there was quite a bit of activity going on with the 4 live-in housekeepers. Okay, so there was just a lot of activity going on in the household in the 60s. And now I never saw any of that, but when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I told you that I drank because my mother died, and you would have needed to have put a lid on that pain. And that's what made me alcoholic. I had no idea that there was a disease and an allergy and an obsession and all of that stuff. But you would have been an alcoholic too. Because I thought outside issues or outside circumstances made me alcoholic. I misunderstood that for a long, long time. And what I understand today is those outside circumstances just influenced my old ideas. So I'm the kind of gal who's got a host of old ideas based on what my outside, you know, circumstance was. There was a lot of women came through the door. My dad was a party animal, yada, 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 yada. I build this whole life, and I just dip into my old ideas, not even knowing they're an old idea. And that's what the third column of a 4-column inventory is about. It's about our old ideas. How did it affect your self-esteem? How did it affect your pride, your ambition, your security, your personal relationships, your pocketbook, your sex? How did these things affect you? What did you do when these are affected? How do you behave when you get hurt or threatened, Katie? Oh, wow. Well, let me tell you, when I was drinking, I drank alone at the end because, you know, that's what we usually do. We usually end up drinking alone because wouldn't you guys agree that we run off the moderate drinker instantly? Instantly. They are horrified by our drinking. And the hard drinker hangs with us until given sufficient reason they can stop or moderate. And so then we basically got to drink alone because nobody drinks like I drink. And once again, you know, I mean, I can tell you I started drinking at 12 years old. And for me at 12 years old, now keep in mind, you know, outside issues were easier to get than booze because you were going to get caught drinking the booze, mom and dad's booze. And so what we would do is we'd go down and we'd sit in front of that 7-Eleven at about 12 years old and we'd wait for Creepy Guy. You guys know Creepy Guy. Yeah. We'd wait for Creepy Guy to pull up and there he is. We see our mark. And we go up to Creepy Guy and we say, listen, we need you to buy us some booze. It's about 3 little girls. And he goes, okay. Okay. And he goes in there and he gets that booze and he comes back out. Now here's the trick. We gotta lose, creepy guy. See, we're on bicycles. We're not in cars. We're not drinking in the bars. We're on bicycles like E.T. And we get on those bicycles, man, and we take off and creepy guy is following us because he says, can I come? And we're like, sure. And we get into the woods as quick as we could and we lose creepy guy. Now here's the tricky thing, guys. Creepy guy's in this room, aren't you? See, you just thought you got away with it. And I know who you are. But that brings me to a point that it's an interesting point in Alcoholics Anonymous to make, and I feel like God has asked me to make certain points up here, and I keep saying to him, are you really? Really? I mean, I like everybody to like me. I was voted most likable. I really want everyone to like me, but the truth of the matter is, he keeps saying yes. And I just want to give you something for your thought. There is a big ordeal that goes on in Alcoholics Anonymous about who the predator is. Who is the predator in Alcoholics Anonymous? I personally think the predator is the women. I don't think it's the men. I think we have convinced you boys to think that it's you. Because we do that very well. And, you know, what happens is you're in Alcoholics Anonymous and you get this, the girl comes in and this is her going to get the coffee. Winding it up. Winding it back to her seat, right? And all of a sudden, she's trying to get someone else's attention, but she's getting the ding-dong other guy. That's kind of the creepy guy in the meeting. And she doesn't want that creepy guy. He's kind of ruining who she's after. So she comes up to the knight in shining armor guy, and she says, Bob, Jim is bothering me. He's really kind of scaring me. And Bob goes, by golly, I'll take care of him. And he goes over there and she's off to get whoever she needs to get. And the truth of the matter is, guys, when any woman comes up to you and says somebody's bothering you, you go get another woman to go over there and talk to that guy. He will run for the hills. And I always tell Charlie when the women come up to him and go, Charlie, so-and-so's bothering me. And Charlie goes, Katie. I'm like, who? Who's bothering you? Oh, Bob over there? I'll take care of him. And then I pull the little girl aside and I said, let me tell you something. I watched you shake that butt about 9 times to go get that coffee. And the problem here is that you will not stay sober shaking it up in here. And so you're the one I'm worried about. I'm not worried about old Bob. It's going to be Bob. It's going to be Bill. It's going to be Ted. So just take that into consideration, guys, that the majority, yeah, there's some sickos in AA, but the majority, we women know exactly what we're doing. I was 12 years old finding the mark at the 7-Eleven. You don't think I can handle a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous? I got the creep meter going out all the time. You know what I mean? Oh, creep, creep, creep. And I scare them to death, you know. So that's for what that's worth. And I just think it's so important too. I think there's another thing that God wants me to say to women, and that is this nonsense old idea of that women come in here and they say they hated other women. Oh, stop it. That's an old idea. And so they seem to get you guys to buy into that. And what women need to do is to, the minute a woman walks in these rooms, you gotta go over to her. And the prettier she is, get over to her quicker. Because the prettier she is, the stupider you boys get. Now I'm telling you, stupid. Stupid. And so it's up to us women to go over there and to, God darn it, make these women feel at home. That's what happened when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. The women surrounded me. And then in 20 years, something started happening. And a pretty woman walks by and everybody just, you kind of have that feel. Or just a woman walks by and you get that feel and you go, stop it. Go over there to her and say, hey, are you new? Yeah, I am. And we're, it's, you know what I'm saying? So just, let's all do that, okay? And, you boys stay out of it. Totally. I mean it. I'm coming down here to check on y'all. So, I ended up cheating all the way through school. Once again, Stu, my new best friend, he and I have so much in common. I did manage to get out of high school. However, I did cheat my way all the way through from the second grade on. And so I learned nothing. Nothing. Now here's something I want to tell you. I'm 53 years old, been sober 26 years, done enough inventory to know that today I do not need an education to make me okay. I don't need it. But if you feel that your alcoholism cheated you out of an education and you want an education, I will be your biggest cheerleader. It's not that I don't like education. I just don't care for it for me. As a matter of fact, I don't care where Venezuela is. I don't really even enjoy watching the news. I mean, all of a sudden Egypt comes on there, I'm like, whatever, click. I mean, it's just not, and for some reason, it's almost sacrilegious to say that. People are like, oh! And I think, oh my, we drove past, I was speaking in Oklahoma City, and we drove past the college, OU, you know. And Charlie goes, my God, is that a beautiful building? I thought, oh, looks like prison. It's, no, nothing about that is appealing to me. And then, so in AA, they hand you a book, and I'm like, oh, that's a problem. That's going to be a problem. You got it on tape or anything? Because, I mean, I can read and I can write, but I cannot comprehend well at all. If you ask me to read a paragraph and then tell you what I just read, I don't really know. And here's the interesting thing. You remember when you're watching the news, you remember the whole Wiener thing that came out? Now, that intrigued me. That storyline intrigued me. I know he was a politician of some sorts, which I could care less, but his whole Wiener story was just amazing to me. So call me shallow, whatever, but that's who I am. And this guy comes into our home group, and he's from Norway, and I sponsor this one chick, and we call each other Dumb and Dumber. And she says to me, she says, he's standing right there, and she says, he's from Norwegia. And I said, silly, he is Norwegian. And I swear, everybody standing around was like, oops, I believe we said something stupid. But, and my husband loves history. Oh my God. And I really believe he thinks if he teaches it to me correctly, I'll want to learn. Oh my God. We'll be walking along, and I love what Matthew said when he went to his first meeting, how he heard the first speaker went wah wah, wah wah. When my husband starts with the history, it's like wah wah, wah wah. He'll go, we're in New York. I believe it was New York. I can't remember. The Nile River. Does the Nile River run through New York? Okay, well, wherever that was. He said something about the Nile River. And I'm like, oh my God, we're walking down the hallway. I think this hallway's too long. I'm not going to make anyone. Well, the Nile River originally started in the upper panhandle of the left coast of the whatever. And, oh my God, he drives me crazy. I'll ask him, I'll say, Charlie, how do you spell something? He'll go, let's sound it out. Oh my God. I don't want to sound it out. Either give it, and I'm telling you, we'll go. Oh. Well, I left home at 15 because I was an absolute pain in the ass. Anybody was a pain in the ass at home? Oh, come on. Come on. We are a room full of them. Or you raised one. How many of y'all have your kids that are a pain in the ass? Yeah, there you go. So that was me. Now here, I was the youngest of three, and I am not kidding you, I was such a pain in the neck that my father did not come looking for me when we had the big fight, and he said, if you can't live under this house, you're gonna live out there, and I said, I'm gone. And I never went home. So I'm 15 years old, I managed to finish school because I have everybody doing what I want them to do because I am the keen at convincing you. I love page 61. It says, what usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. So I back up and I become more demanding or gracious as the case may be. I got to work the crowd. I got to work that principal and I got to work every teacher and I got to do all of this because I am 15. I am on my own. You hurt or threaten me, watch out. I will get what I need. See, that's the kind of people we are. We don't roll over. Nobody rolls over us. We do what needs to be done and get it done. And that's what I did. And I never went home. I thought, oh, I will not go home. I don't care how scared I am. I convinced a woman to rent me a room, yada, 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 yada. And needless to say, all bets were off at that point. Oh, my God, I just went rip-roaring drunk down the world. I lived on my own at 15. I didn't even have a driver's license yet. Rode my bicycle to school, determined that I'd get that diploma. Didn't care about the education, still don't today. But I did it. And I'll tell you, somebody who's uneducated, you darn sure better be self-employed if you really want to hit the mark. It's like the real estate thing. You better be self-employed because I am an absolute con artist and I can make some money. Making money, you don't have to be smart to make money, do you? You don't have to be well-educated to make money. And I'm still in the same career for 30 years. Top producer. Imagine that. And, I've been in the fitness business for 30 years. And I've been, you know, one of the top producers in my franchise. And that's what I'm talking about, guys, is it was one of those things that it's like, oh, it's not about being dumb or smart. As a matter of fact, I kind of like being a little, I don't like the word ignorant. Never have cared for that word. But I like being pliable in that area, deciding what I do and don't want to learn without needing it to make me be okay. So I go through life and I end up getting pregnant because that's what women do. You know, could you boys imagine if you had to remember to take the pill? Could you imagine how difficult that would be? It is not easy to remember that. Now, think in a drunken stupor or a four-day blackout. Did you take your pills, boys? Oh, my God. It is not an easy thing to do. So, of course, we're going to end up pregnant. That's just what we do. And so I end up pregnant, and I end up, you know, marrying a boy who's way too old. And we get together, and I have this small child, and I drag that little girl through stuff she has no business being drugged through. Oh, my God. That was when I realized I got a serious problem. People think that you can stop drinking when you're pregnant. Right. Sure. You talk about the way that mind starts working. It just gets craftier and craftier. I'll just smoke pot because it's organic. You know what I mean? I mean, it just comes, all kinds of things come. I'm out there smoking cigarettes. Right after she was born, a girl in the room in the little, you know, drape next to me says, "Do you need anything?" I said, "You got a cigarette?" She goes, "Yeah, you could smoke in the hospital." I'm just there smoking a cigarette right after my daughter's born. There was no concern for my well-being and my health. I was all about it. I just couldn't wait. Finally, that kid's out of me, and now I can really drink. And so I drag this kid through things. You talk about incomprehensible demoralization. Thank you. I have it. Yes, I have. I've done everything that's terrible in the world that you could do, and I won't share it from the podium. I don't find that necessary for my story. I want to get sober. And so I realized alcohol became my solution. It was the thing that when I drank it, it fixed me. It's liquid courage. It's truth serum. I can tell you exactly what I think about you now. How do you like that? And I am bulletproof. And I did drink with an Al-Anon, untreated. That's not a bad plan. That's not a bad plan at all. Didn't know it at the time, but she just swept up behind me. I mean, swept up. It was great. And now she works herself a darn good Al-Anon program, thank God. And she came into the program right after I did because now she didn't have a drinking buddy. You know what I mean? And she was not alcoholic. So what ends up happening, fast forward, I tumble into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You'll love this. Chasing a boy. People say, well, you need to come to AA for you. Oh, right. How many of us came in here just for us? We came in here to get the pressure off of us. We came in here, you know, the majority, I mean, some of you may have, but the truth of the matter is we came to get everybody off our back. Get off my back, man. I'm done. I'm done with my parents telling me that I'm dragging this kid through. Needless to say, I got divorced. You know, that wasn't going to work. Single mother, that child should have been taken from me a long time ago. But Child Protective Services back then wasn't a big deal like it is today. Crack has changed all of that. Thank goodness. So I tumble into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous chasing this boy that said he had 6 years sobriety, a word I'd never heard. I said, 6 years sobriety? What does that mean? And he said, I haven't had a drink or a mind-altering chemical in 6 years. And I thought, big fat liar is what he is, but he is so cute. I'm chasing him in there anyway. And so I chased him into that meeting. And here's the deal, guys. The night before, I was dressed as Tina Turner because it was a Halloween weekend. And, of course, it was all going awry. My car broke down because you had that junky old car. And I had that gold hair. And I had this really hot dress on and the sequins and, I mean, the fishnet tights. And Tina Turner was my hero because she's a strong-willed woman. I'm la, 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 la. And so I end up telling these boys, I'm thinking I can get their attention. I said, you know what? I think I drink too much. I think I need to go to AA. And they're like, really? Yeah. And I'm thinking this is all a good plan until all of a sudden they say, it's time to go. And it's like, oh, no. Whoa. Maybe overreacted, had all your attention when I said I was gone. I end up going into that meeting scared to death, thinking I've made a bad decision. And I walk in. It's a room full of people like y'all. I'm like, what? where's the trench coat guy and the no teeth and the bag and the bottle? And I got all these old ideas about what alcoholism looks like, right? And I look and I see all these people, and these women immediately come to me. There was none of this weirdness. I mean, these women just come to me. It's 1984. And they just surround me, and I'm like, okay, I'm digging you women, but, you know, I'm kind of wanting to sit with these boys over here. And they're like, no, you're going to come with us. And the next thing I know is I'm sitting in that meeting. They say, is anybody new? Now, remember, I have not showered, so I've got gold hair kind of towering to the left here, you know, and I got the makeup under the eyes. Now, I think I am cute. I love when Teresa said that. How many of y'all are there? Oh, yeah, a woman. Okay, I'm ready. And in the meeting, they go, is anybody new? And I swear to God, they do this. I thought, oh, my. I said, me? Yeah, I'm me. Ooh, okay. You know, and I just said, I'm Katie. I didn't say I'm alcoholic. I didn't know what I was doing, right? And I ended up having, the laughter was just intoxicating to me. I hadn't laughed in so long. And I was sitting there going, oh, my God. See, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and absolutely fell in love with you guys. It was the greatest miracle in the world. And God said, you know what? The only way she's going to probably get here in order to not kill that child is to chase a boy in. So however you get here, I don't care. But once you're in here, I got you now. And so I'm in these rooms. I love these people. And then this gal just took me under her wing. She was absolutely beautiful. She took me under her wing, and she was amazing to me. Amazing. She stayed sober for another 3 years, then went back out for 20. And now she's back in. Go figure, huh? The person that literally, literally connected me to the herd ended up going back out and broke my heart. Broke my heart. And now she's back in the herd, and I just love it. And so, see, guys, I fell in love. And one of the other things that happened back then for me was they took my phone number. There was no giving the phone number. They took my number. My phone rang off the hook. Of course, it was a landline. You did have to be at home. But it rang off the hook. And they're like, Katie, you coming to the meeting? You need me to come get you? See, I think a lot of that's getting missed in AA today. When was the last time you called somebody that raised their hand, said they were brand new, said, hey, are you coming to the meeting? You want me to come pick you up? I got stuff to do. I'm kind of busy. Somebody else will do that for me. And that's what ends up happening, I think. And for you guys that do it, my hat's off to you. I'm with you. I'm out there doing it with you. But I think for some reason we've lost the herd. And the herd has got to be back in the corral to get around these new people. At 17 years sober, I am hurting bad in a meeting, and my natural instinct was to walk up to somebody and say, man, I am hurting. Have you got a few minutes? That's how I was raised. And this girl goes, oh, man, no, I got to go. I'm sorry. I thought, well, some choice words in my mind. Then I turned to another girl. I said, man, I am really hurting. Have you got a few minutes? And she goes, yeah. And then all of a sudden her cell phone rings and she gets on it. And I thought, wow, Alcoholics Anonymous sucks. See, I lost faith a long time ago. And that's what I think, man, the herd, we got to all be one in that herd. We got to put the person in the middle of the herd. That's what's required. Well, I end up making this guy love Matthew's story when he said he married that woman, that guy I chased into AA. I married him. Oh, yeah. We're good. Yes, we are good. Then he comes in and he's 6 years sober. He's a big book thumper and I just am in love with him. He reads me this book. We sit there and he's reading the book and I'm thinking, oh my God, my life is so good. We go and remember it was codependency recovery was big back then. We go get codependency recovery. We get in, put in group. We're putting family group. We're putting individual group. We're putting in marriage group. We're grouping, grouping, grouping. Oh my God, I know so much about myself. I could puke, you know. But that's what we did, because that's what everybody in the meeting was doing. You know, I thought I was doing what everybody else was doing. I needed to work on me. And so I get into the book and I'm working on me. I think I got a really good balance going on. About 3 years go by. We have another baby and life starts getting good. And the gifts of sobriety take me away from Alcoholics Anonymous. They absolutely will. The gifts of sobriety, as much as the pain, will take you away. You can't trust either one of them. So the gifts of sobriety take me away from Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a bigger house. I get another baby. I get my job. My career's taken off. And I really don't have time for you guys. Because you know what? The new guys need to do that, don't you think? I mean, I've been busting my butt. Let's let those new guys do some of that work. So my husband comes to me and says, Katie, he says, listen, how about we go back to church? And I thought, that doesn't sound like a good plan. And he goes, no, I found a non-denominational church down the street. And I thought, okay. And I really didn't have anything against God. I just didn't think he cared much for me. I always figured he was helping you find you a parking spot or something. You know, every time I needed him, he was never there, it seemed like. And so so we go to this non-denominational church. I walk in there. They got the big screen. Everybody's singing. We got this going on. I'm thinking, oh, my God, young people, young families. Next thing you know, as an alcoholic can be, is like a chameleon. And I come into that church, and I fall in love with that church, and I begin to be the chameleon. And then I found Jesus. Whew. I found Jesus. You people need to find Jesus too. Oh my God, you know that person in AA who finds Jesus? Come on, I was it. See, it's part of my story. I get to say it. I found Jesus. You say that in the deep south, and they ain't thinking that's funny. And here's the deal, guys, is I found Jesus, and you needed to hear about Jesus. Now here's the thing. Today, you get to choose whatever you want. Personally, I dig it. I'm fine with Jesus. But you get to do anything you want. You get to do Hinduism, Buddhism, nature, whatever you want. And it's funny because anybody can stand up here at the podium and talk about, you know, meeting the Dalai Lama or Tupac Oprah or whoever, you know, and all of a sudden you mention Jesus, everybody goes, God, she said it like 4 times in a row. It's funny. It's funny. Just think about it. Just something to think about. And so the truth of the matter is that I came back into AA to try to show you people that you needed to find Jesus. Have you ever had that person come at you? Oh, man. Everybody was just kind of scattered. And I was thinking, then, of course, I thought, well, I know the answer and they don't. And so I stayed in the church for 3 years with no AA. Our book tells us clearly, in conjunction with Alcoholics Anonymous, always remains number one. And whatever you put is below it. I didn't do that. And so at 3 years away from AA, I'm 6 years sober now. I'm sitting at a red light. And the law in the state of Texas was you could take a right on red. I thought that was huge. I think it's bigger than the iPhone, but, you know, that's up for your own opinion. And so I'm sitting there at the intersection, and I think, that woman in front of me, little old woman, you know, the little white gloves you see, and she is not taking a right on red. She's obviously not heard the news. And I'm thinking, you know what? I need to push her in the middle of this intersection right here, right now. I mean, I'm grinding my hands on that wheel, and I'm figuring out how I can do it all in the name of Jesus. You know what I mean? I'm just going to bust her right in the middle of that intersection. And I end up just going, oh, my God, I have this moment of clarity that something is not right. And I do not push her in the middle of that intersection. I get home, and I tell my husband, I said, Joe, I'm not doing very good. He said, I'm not either. I said, what are we going to do? He goes, I think we need to go back to AA. I said, absolutely. So we go back that moment, man. We go to a noon meeting, same old noon meeting we used to go to. And all of a sudden we're sitting there, and I lean over to Joe and I go, my God, we're home, honey. We're back with our people. We are home. And he said, I know it. And he put his hand on my leg. And I'd love to tell you we skipped down the road of happy destiny at that point. But what we did was tragic. And we did it. Nobody did it to us in Alcoholics Anonymous. I take 100% responsibility for the rest of my story. I take it all. It's all my responsibility. Is we did what I didn't realize we were doing. It's called meeting-based sobriety. We sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in hopes that the fellowship could keep us sober. I couldn't have told you where my big book was. I didn't get a sponsor. I just needed a meeting. And I did those meetings, and I would go to a meeting, and I would get relief, but never freedom. And I didn't work those 12 steps. I'd already done them, for heaven's sakes. I did them. I went to church. I've grown spiritually. Get out of my face. And then what do you do in meetings when you're only working on the fellowship? You start picking off people in AA, don't you? There goes Big Head Doug. You know, oh, there goes, you know, blind Bob getting ready to talk again. Lovely. And then before you know it, if you're not careful, you kill the only thing that's going to save your life. Now, I don't know I'm doing this, though. I have become a victim of my own delusion that I can rest, satisfaction, and happiness if I just manage well. Our disease is so tricky that it tells me alcohol is the problem. And without alcohol, I should be fine. And I've done enough AA. Now, for heaven's sakes, I'm 10 years sober, 15 years sober. You can't tell me anything. I'm sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous going to 5 meetings a week because I need relief. See, when you work only, when you're only in the fellowship and you're not in the work, it's a circle. It's not a line. The steps are circular. They don't ever stop. We have 4 through 9 to clear us, right? 4 through 9 is to get me unblocked because God rests in here. 10 and 11 are discipline steps. And 12 is about helping his kids. And so what I didn't get is, oh, hell, there was no discipline. I had found my amends had made it into a drawer. I only made the ones of the immediate tornado. I probably made 20 amends. I bet I had 400. But I wasn't going back to all people. I wasn't even that bad. I mean, come on. Don't I have some support in here? You're not that bad. Oh, yeah. I was stark raving sober. Stark raving sober. So what do you do when you're that sick? You got to find a really sick AA meeting. And then you got to become a member of a sick AA meeting. And you know, people say that, well, you know, AA is, let me tell you, I was an active member of a sick AA meeting. We could have been called always in collision with somebody or something, even though our motive was good. We were sick. And here's a tip for you to figure out a sick AA meeting, is it never grows. It's a dangerous place. Now, a really healthy AA meeting will usually grow, but a sick one usually stays pretty stagnant. And there's something in the book that I love. You know, it says half measures availed us nothing. It says that some of these we balked, middle of the road. There is no middle of the road solution. The book talks all about it. I was sitting there living and it didn't even know it. And nobody could come tell me. On page 25, it says, if you are a serious alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming so impossible. And if we had passed into this region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. And the other was to accept spiritual help. Well, let me tell you what, guys, you can do that in sobriety very easily. And what I didn't realize is that I had made that decision. And I misunderstood the third step forever. I don't think the new guy gets the third step for a long, long time. It's that level of self that I didn't get because, see, you're asking me to set down the only tool that has worked all my life. Katie can get anything Katie wants. I got a whole history of experience of that. So you want me to set that down? Forget it. I'll bring God in when I need him. But he ain't touching about 5 of my personal areas of my life, period. I remember clearly saying that to myself. It would be, all of a sudden, it would get hot in the kitchen, right? And I'd say, God, I need you on this one. And then I'd hand it over to God, and I'd realize he is working way too slow. So you know what? Hand it back. Give me back that baton. I'm going to get back out there and take it. And then it starts to get hot in the kitchen. Then I give it back to God. Take it, give it, take it, give it. It was like a relay race. And here I am sitting in these meetings. I became a slogan slinger. See, you got no AA program. You got to sling some slogans. Let it go. Turn it over. Come on. Easy does it. Just live and let live. Right? I love this one. Love and tolerance is our code. When you come at me and I am fuming and I'm in untreated alcoholism with those bedevilments all over me and you say, love and tolerance is our code, I want to punch you in the face. Yes? Have we all sat in that experience? Yes, you're looking at me. Kind of shocking. Thank you. I appreciate that head nod. Yes. And so we're sitting, and I'm looking at somebody going, did you not hear my problem? This is big. I got nothing, man. I got no AA program, clearly, right? Now, you may see that. But don't throw a slogan at me because that's the line. If a mere code of morals or better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, I would have done it. But see, there's people sitting in these rooms that got nothing. They got the fellowship. The fellowship is fabulous. It's one side of the triangle. That's it. So I'm trying to live on the unity. And you can't. It's not sufficient to overcome alcoholism. So you're asking me to work the promises, hoping the steps come true. Do you see what I'm saying? So when somebody's having a hard time, come at me and tell me the directions. You know, when I hear somebody hurting in a meeting or angry as a fire ant, I go over there to them and go, hey, come on outside with me. Let me talk to you for a few minutes. And I sit down, I said, you know what? We're going to get angry. Oh, yeah. I have yet to meet one alcoholic who's free of anger. We're going to get angry. We cannot afford to stay angry. See, resentment is the number one offender. It kills more of us than anything else. From its stems, all forms of spiritual disease. So before you know it, man, I'm just wanting to slap the kids. I'm kicking the dog. I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I have no idea. I'm in complete untreated alcoholism. It's a disease that must be treated with the 12 steps. If I'm not working the 12 steps, if I'm out there just reading a spiritual literature of some other, you know, being, that is not treating alcoholism. I suffer from a disease that I will eventually go back and take a drink. Eventually go back and take a drink. Because then that drink is my solution. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I worked a program based on the abstinence of alcohol. I had no idea I was doing that. I did not get this self-peace at all. At all. And let me tell you, when you hit the wall enough times with selfishness and self-centeredness, you are bloodied and beaten. We come into Alcoholics Anonymous with a clear ass whipping. Yeah? All these other boys have been cussing too, so don't you get all judgmental on me because I laid out a cuss word of ass. Right? So, you know, Sandy lobbed out the big one, the GD. I heard him do that one. I thought, okay. I heard that. All bets are off for me, man. I'm okay now. So you come off of alcoholism, I mean beat. Well, nobody came in here because they burnt the toast. We came in here because we were beat down to nothing. Well, what ends up happening with that second surrender, which I think is huge, is the second surrender to the third step, the clear misunderstanding. See, I can't see self-centeredness in myself. I am blinded to it. It says I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, comma, though she usually doesn't think so. What a delusion is that? So I don't even know I'm that. How many of you guys can see self-centeredness real easy in others? Oh, yes. Oh, my God. My husband. Oh, all day long. In and out. In and out. Oh, my God. It kills me. Here's a perfect example. My husband cannot stand if you chew gum and sit next to him. I mean, he goes ballistic. He's just like ape crazy. And he's going, oh my God, give me some tissue. I gotta shove tissue in my ear. You know, this chick is over there snapping and popping and popping and snapping and snapping and pop, 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 pop. I'm like, oh my God, honey, I don't even hear it. Just deal with it. But then he'll sit there and drink ice and chew on ice. And he says, it keeps me awake. So you think the gum might be helping her stay awake, huh? Self-manifested in various ways is what caused our failure. Now, the tricky thing is, I see it clearly in my husband, who I happen to love with all my heart. But I am blinded to it in myself. Now, I see it better today. Don't get me wrong. I'm sober 26 years. I think I work a pretty darn good basic fundamental program. But I can tell a sponsee something and call my sponsor with a problem I got, and she shares the exact same thing that I just told a sponsee. Because, see, we do not have certain filters. We need somebody watching us at all times. That's what the 10th step is about. It says to watch for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. It doesn't say to wait for it. It says to watch. And I shoot guns because I am from Texas. And this is what watching looks like. I'm watching for dove. You know, dove season opened a couple of days ago. I am a pretty darn good shot, too. And so you're watching. And then it says when these crop up, not if. We are to do four things. And I mean, there's the directions right there. And then you know what you're supposed to do after that? It's shocking when you read the book, guys. You're supposed to take that into an evening review to double check your work, to be sure when we retire at night, did we in fact do all the things we were supposed to do during the day? And then guess what? It says then your corrective measures are to be taken into your prayer and meditation the next day. Shut up. You want me to do that every day? Well, I mean, I read the 24-hour book. You want me to do, oh, you want me to do all that every day? I'm busy. I'm tired. See, and this is what it's saying. It's saying if you don't stay on top of that stuff, you're grumpy. And all of a sudden, I'm restless, irritable, and discontented. I call my sponsor about 2-3 times a week. We have a way of doing this because she's at work. She works a very big business, big job at criminal justice system. Big shot. She says, you know what? She goes, I handle all the money. It doesn't bother me, but when they bring that cocaine in, whoo, ha, 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 ha. She says, I look at that thing, wow. You know, and I said, I can't believe they gave you the keys to that vault. You know, thank God we work a pretty solid program. They don't even know what they're doing. But one of the things is she's a busy girl down there. She can't be on the phone all the time. So I leave my 10th step on the phone for her. Man, oh, man, let me tell you what happened. I got hurt or threatened today badly. And my indicator is if it bothers me for more than 15 minutes. How many of y'all know that one? We're going, yeah. If that goes longer than 15 minutes, I darn sure better be doing a 10th step. Because, see, a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient for me. My disease will tell me it's not. I'm going to fast forward all of a sudden because my life gets bad, guys, bad. My husband gets sick. We've been married 20 years, and he gets very sick, and I can't figure out what's wrong with him. And all of a sudden, I'm at this sick meeting. And let me tell you, God works through sick meetings, too. Don't get me wrong. There's a girl sitting there, and I said, man, my husband's sick. I don't know what's wrong with him. Something's wrong with his brain. And she says, you know what, Katie, you can go work, drive a school bus. Go drive that school bus, and you'll get instant HMO, just like that. Oh, that's all I needed, right? I'm in untreated alcoholism. I'll go take advantage of the school system. Who does that hurt? IRS, who does that hurt? Come on, are y'all with me? Insurance companies, who's that hurting? They need to be screwed anyway, don't they? So I go, I'll go down and drive that school bus. Sure. See, when you're in untreated alcoholism, you can start lying, and it's not that big a deal. You can start cheating and stealing. Heck, I almost stole some gum at the grocery store a couple of days ago with my host. Put it right in my purse. She goes, are you going to steal that? It was like, no, no. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I stuck it in my purse. And I thought, I'll just tell her, at 26 years, you can start stealing again. No big deal. It works its way back around. But when you're in untreated alcoholism, you can do all kinds of things and completely justify them because you've got no spiritual balance going on. And so I go down there. I get this job on the school bus. Oh, my God, you guys, look at me driving a school bus in untreated alcoholism. Imagine how insane I was. I get on that bus, and I am telling you what, I got instant HMO. I tell my husband, get to that hospital. Get there. Get that brain scanned. I went off this bus as quick as I can. Day one, two boys break out in a fight at the middle school. Blood's flying everywhere on my bus. I grab them by the shirt cuff, man. I take them down there to the principal's office. I'm walking. And the other bus driver goes by and goes, did you get the key? I'm like, no. Oh, my God. So I turn around. I go get the key, and I look at all those kids. I'm like, I swear to God, one of you kids screws up, I'll kick your ass. You got it. I mean, I'm telling you, have you ever gone on a school bus? You know, you better get the alpha figure quick. I take these two kids in. I basically throw them to the principal. We didn't even get off the campus day one. And all of a sudden, I come back, and my bus is rocking like this. These kids are jumping from one seat to another and literally lifting those wheels off the ground. I swear I got on there. I mean, I'm spitting. I'm so crazy. And I could have taken three of them out right there. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm that crazy. I'm telling you, homicide's an option. Suicide, not an option. You know what I mean? Killing you is going to be sufficient. You know what I mean? That's where I go. I am that crazy. And I swear I am screaming at these kids. And the next thing you know, I'm on that bus and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I can't do this anymore. And I take Joe down to the emergency room and I'm getting his brain scanned. And all of a sudden, I said, now, Joe, listen, when we get in that emergency room, they're going to tell you to touch your nose. You be sure and touch that elbow. See, because I'm running the show, right? Are y'all with me on this? You got to be sure all the players know what to do. And I said, when they tell you to touch your ear, you touch your nose. Because you're getting that head scanned, and I'm getting off that damn bus. That's what I'm thinking. So all of a sudden, Joe, we get down there, and the doctor comes in. He goes, and once again, I got a lot of old ideas behind doctors. He comes in with that white suit on. He says, so you think there's something wrong with this brain? I'm like, yes, I do. And so he says, well, let's see, Joe, why don't you touch your nose? And Joe goes, I'm like, oh, my God. The show doesn't come off very well. This is not what we wanted. And he starts abiding by everything the doc tells him. We're not getting a brain scan. I'm thinking, oh, plan B. I'm going to knock this doctor out, take his little white coat. I'm sticking him in the tube myself, man. I don't care what I got to do. He's getting his brain scanned today. I am not leaving here without a brain scan. Tell me I'm in a room full of people who understand that. You hurt or threaten me bad enough, I'm in. Back up. Every one of you, back up. Huh? How do you like that? Yeah, I'm sober. Go ahead, back up. Yeah. So all of a sudden the doctor asks him a couple of questions. He realizes, you know what? There is something wrong. I'm going to go scan his brain. So he scans his brain. He asks him some math questions. He comes back in. Doctor puts his hand right here. He says, my God, he's got a gigantic mass in his brain. I've never seen one that big. One whole side of his brain's pushed on the other side. And my first thought was, my God, I'm going to be driving that damn school bus forever. See, that's the level of self-centeredness I'm working with. That's what I'm walking around with today. See, I thought that first thought would go away, guys. It doesn't. Not for me. My thought life is placed on a higher plane, which means when I have that thought, I dig into my toolkit. But I thought those ugly thoughts would go away. It's not been my experience. You hurt or threaten me, and it's ugly. What's going to happen to me? Well, needless to say, I drove that school bus for 3 more years. And let me tell you, I got crazy on that school bus. You hit that air brake, scares the crap out of the kids. I loved it. I brought some style to that school bus, too. There was a BMW in the neighborhood. I drove in a rich neighborhood, and this BMW guy and I just hated each other. Because, see, I work no program, so I can hate you. Hate you. And so, because I went to my meeting, you know, 5 times a week. So this BMW guy would come at me, and I swear to God, the power of that stop sign on the side of the bus is the greatest gift. You got to put one on the side of your car, man. You pop that stop sign out, that BMW would be coming. It wouldn't even be a stop. You know, it's not a stop for the kids to get off. It doesn't matter. You pop that baby out, you look at him and go, come on, bring it on. Bring it on, buddy. You gonna, huh? You gonna mess with that? Go ahead, try. Pass that. I hope a cop is around. Pull your butt right over right now. He'd look at me, he'd be going, what is your problem? You are my problem. I had no sponsor. I had nobody take that to. I'm stark raving sober, guys. Stark raving sober. It's easy to do in this program, let me tell you. Says we were, the bedevilments, we were having trouble with our personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy and we couldn't seem to be a real help to others. I had 3 anxiety attacks when my husband was sick. Blow in the bag anxiety attacks. That's what untreated alcoholism will do. Medical society will want to put you on an antidepressant like that. I didn't touch the 12 steps. I had no idea that those would take care of it. I'm not going down the antidepressant road, and if you got your panties in a knot, don't. I'm just saying my experience was I had 3 massive anxiety attacks because I did not have the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. When it says we have a malady and we have a disease and I'm not treating it, I'm depressed. I'm crazy is what I am. I am crazy. Well, then, fast forward. When I talk about how passionate I am about Alcoholics Anonymous and about the disease of alcoholism, fast forward 6 years. My husband's sick as can be. He's not gonna die from the brain tumor. It's benign, for God's sakes. We have the most amazing things happened, but we were in untreated alcoholism, and it doesn't matter how amazing they are if you've got no spiritual program. We had AA coming to our aid. The fellowship was the greatest it could have ever been. And the next thing you know, my husband's in untreated alcoholism. And what happens to us when we're sitting around in untreated alcoholism? The simple thing that might happen to you is you might have to have a root canal. And all of a sudden the doctor says, you know, you're going to need a little Vicodin. And you go, yes, I am. And they give you a little Vicodin. What happens? It treats the malady, triggers the allergy. And the next thing you know, you're scheduling more dental work. I think I'm going to have another root canal. Right back there, bothering me. And we start taking those pills. And what happened to my husband is all of a sudden, he wasn't doing very well. And the next thing I know, he's triggered the allergy. He is off to the races. And he ends up dying of a heroin overdose at 23 years sober. Thank you. And yeah. So, do I take alcoholism seriously? Yes, I do. We were married 20 years. It was never, ever in my mind that either of us would ever go back out. And I got crazy behind that. And thank God for my husband today. He was our best friend, Charlie. He absolutely saved my life. And let me tell you, he had no program at all. He hates when I say this. He does. When I told him that the monkey was on my back, and he said to me, he said, "Don't drink without me." That was the best he could offer. And let me tell you, it worked. So I believe two people who are trying desperately to stay sober can stay sober on some weak old AA. But you better get some help. So if you get some moment of clarity, guys, when you come in here, that you know what? I hadn't read my big book in a long time. Matter of fact, I hadn't called my sponsor in forever. Matter of fact, I don't even have a sponsor. I hadn't ever finished my amends. If some of these things you're not doing, this program is available for you. This rocketed into a fourth dimension is available. But that moment of clarity is of no value if it's not followed by action. Period. Action, it's an action program. And so this is the understanding I now have of the third step. I run into my sponsor. I ask her to sponsor me. She says, okay. I tell her my whole situation. She kind of knew about it. She says, let me tell you something, Katie. She says, I told her all about the Joe thing, and she knew about it, but I told her about it. She said, I want you to read page 60 to 63. Now, let me ask you this. If you don't know what's on those pages, you might be in the same boat I was. And so I opened the book because I'm thinking that's going to be the part of the book that says some of us have it worse than others. I know that's got to be in there somewhere. It's been a long time since I've read the book, but I think that's in there somewhere. And I happened to open to page 62, and it said selfishness and self-centeredness that we think is the root of our trouble. And I swear, I'm sorry, I got to cuss. I said, did that bitch not hear a word I said? Oh, my God. And I called her back. I said, what the hell? This is what you want me to read? And she said, you know, Katie, there's a fine line between sorrow and self-pity. And I believe you've stepped into self-pity. It's been 18 months since Joe had died. And so I ended up getting with this girl. And let me tell you what, she pulled out the third step like nobody's business. It's going to be about 4 more minutes, so y'all just kind of get a good stretch going. It says, listen to this, the misunderstanding I had. I am in constant collision with somebody or something, even though my motives are good. The third step is all about good motives, guys, because when I take my good motive and I run it through my delusion, it is utopia. You people should be enjoying this. What is the problem? I am blinded to my self-seeking motives, blinded to them when they have a good on the end of it. It says, if only my arrangements would stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. Isn't that spectacular? See, so if you people do everything I need you to do, it'd be great. It says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem. I don't think too much of myself or too little of myself. I just think of me all the time. All the time. Every time. I can't see that in myself. I can't say, well, by golly, today I'm just not going to be so selfish. I'll hold the door open for you, but you darn sure better say thank you. Right? I'll let you in line, but you better wave at me. See, everything's got a motive, because I'm a nice guy. And what I don't understand is, listen to these things. It says I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, right? Fear's not my problem. Self-centered fear is what's driving me. But it's because I'm so selfish and self-centered, I got to get to the root of it. I'm a self-seeker even when trying to be kind. I'm a producer of confusion rather than harmony. Where did I step on the toes of my fellows? Where did I make a decision based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt? See, that's what I'm talking about. I don't even know I have a motive until my stuff's in the ditch and I'm calling my sponsor. So the best promise in the book says, so my problems are of my own making. That is such a gift for in order for me to be free. The problem's got to be me. I can always see self-centeredness in others. Guys, in the terms it says in the third step, it says, he provided what I needed if I stay close to him and perform his work well. Well, I wasn't really staying close to him the way it's required for an alcoholic. And I wasn't taking care of his kids. I was coming to meetings, sucking the life out of them. And so I started doing this stuff, and all of a sudden I started really getting an understanding of that third step. And I became rocketed into a fourth dimension. I actually work all 12 steps most of the time. Wouldn't it be interesting if we put the word actually by each step? I actually made amends to all persons I'd harmed. I actually took inventory. Right? It's really interesting when you look at it that way. The four steps is a manifestation of self. It comes in various ways. I have to look at it from an entirely different angle. The 10th step is keeping my finger on the pulse of it all. I have to. The 11th step is doing the prayer and meditation, the evening review. And then I have the 12th step, which I think if you're not sponsoring, I just can hardly believe that. Why in the world would you not be sponsoring? If you haven't had a spiritual awakening, you want me to tell you how you can get one? First thing is to get some of these CDs. Not necessarily people's stories, but the big book studies. Get the studies, get the book, get a couple of your buddies in AA to sit around and listen to them. Start studying that thing like you're getting ready to learn French. And then get into the book and learn it and have depth and weight in a message. Experiential, yes. I hear people say sometimes, oh, people study that book and they got nothing. I haven't met many of them. I've met a handful. But I've met a lot more people that have learned this book and have gone out and carried a message that has got depth and weight. Explaining the disease of alcoholism, a fatal dose of alcoholism to somebody, so that they're going to want to work the rest of this program. You're not putting your foot on their throat. You're doing it through a loving way. But I think most of us, if not careful, will end up loving somebody right into the grave. I'd much rather step on your toes than stand on your grave. And unfortunately, I got to watch it first-handed with my husband. And I have experienced a lot of things in sobriety. And I told God, this is the message you want me to bring? You don't want me to talk about drinking? It's so much funnier. No. He asked me to be the one. He said, you're cute. Bring it. I said, okay, I'll bring it. And I'll tell you guys, one of the wonderful things about this program is it's available for everybody. Oh, my God, I'll hand you my phone number. I'll help you the best I can. I'll do whatever you need me to do. You can pick up the phone, call me any day. I'll help you with these steps if you have a misunderstanding. I am available because I've realized that my life has never been better. I've been in the greatest marriage. I never knew I could be so happy. And I love my husband to death, and I lost the love of my life, and God brought me another one. Spectacular. Who would have guessed that? Thank you very much for having me.